reasons I feel comfortable telling you guys anything is that we're all horribly disorganized and no one's tried to even organize this shit.
That's how we all know we're pause and bring it back to like one point I do want to talk about again is this school shooting in that just happened.
I think this is one of, again,
it brings me back to
fucking and now in your school shootings, man. How many times are you gonna talk about a school shooting? Like, we do this like every few weeks. Come on,
because it happens every few weeks.
Yeah. Because it literally happens so fucking often. This kid,
this is normal, dude. This happens everywhere in the world.
His parents bought him a gun for Christmas.
His parents hid when they found out what he did, or they fled.
His 15-year-old kid was gifted a gun for Christmas, and he used that gun to kill.
He went to the shop with his dad to buy the gun.
Yeah, and then his mom used that gun to kill four kids, and he had 18 rounds left in that gun when he was caught. Like, he still had 18 rounds. Like, that is just, that is scary as shit, man. What the fuck are we doing, man? This is
it's America. That's been America as long as you have been in America. Before any of us were born, sadly, most likely long after all of us are dead. Because we're talking about
most likely one of us is gonna be dead from one of these.
Even the Ahmaud Arbery case was a glimpse into how lynchings used to happen back in the day. You swap the trucks with horses.
We could talk about the Arbery.
Excellent case. Excellent defense though. I've been fucking hooked on that.
Excellent defense, right? Yeah. Did you guys see of how like the head prosecutor Linda Donakowski, I think her name is.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did a good job. Like the point that I made on Discord, like she's really good at her job. Like I don't.
But the defense though, phenomenal. You got to give them credit, man.
Like she's a very talented. She's a very talented prosecutor. There's no doubt in my mind. But the point that I was trying to make was that if I chased a man on the street who's running away, and I chased him down with a gun. With two of us, we chased him down with two guns in our pickup truck and told him to stop. When he didn't, we fought with him and then shot him dead and then claimed self-defense. If I did all of those things, I certainly wouldn't want Linda Donakowski prosecuting my case.
Oh, but that's the thing. It was a straight-up lynching. Like, it was
like that's the thing. Like,
even the other guy, Brian or Roddy, or whatever the fuck, he said when the GBI agent asked him when they're doing the reenactment, why did he even leave the driveway in the first place? He's like, I don't know, man, instinct. That's what he said. So his instinct was to saw a black man running down the street being chased by another truck. His instinct was to go fucking help do whatever.
So here's the funny thing
on the lynching. Yeah,
here's the funny thing about that dude.
That's like, how lynchings work.
William Roddy Bryan or whatever his that's that guy. But one of the funniest things is like his entire defense was that he was a witness to the killing. He was not a participant. But if you look at the police video, I'm not even kidding. The police body cam video from the day. Okay, I shouldn't laugh. There is someone who's dead, by the way. But if you look at the police body cam video, it's like this dude is actually boasting. Like, hey, man, yeah, I cut him off. He was trying to run away. I cut him off. Like, I think he hit my car. Like,
I drove him into a ditch.
We pinned him. I was like, dude, this guy was boasting. Like, he wanted so much to be part of this lynching. Like, he wanted to be that kid in class.
Belonging.
Like, and make sure give me credit for.
Give me credit.
For,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, like the goal you scored, like I made the first pass like 90 yards away. Like that was from my pass. Like, you know, otherwise that got like why are you fucking surprised you're gonna end up getting life in prison? Like fun. Like fuck that shit.
Yeah, fuck those guys, dude.
That's what I was like when I heard. Okay, another part was like when they're what's it called? Examining the guy shot was it Travis McMichael? And she broke it down so well to the point where she asked so many questions, which led up to the last question. And what was Ahmaud Arbery doing? He was like, he was just running. And I was like, oh, that's it. And yep, then she just destroyed him for another hour from there. And that was the point. Like,
she questioned him for some 4 hours, I think. One of the good things that she kept doing was like, because she kept going back and forth in the timeline. Like, she would talk about the start, and then she'd go right to like point like eight, and then she'll bring it back to point four. One of those, what that really does is like, it really like, because this dude is trying to lie. Like, he knows that he fucked up.
Trying to keep his shit straight. Yeah.
So once that happens, when the timeline gets mixed, the lies that he has been like coached by his lawyers, like all that gets jumbled up. That's when he starts like flipping and giving out answers that he doesn't want to, like
making little mistakes. Yeah.
So it was, again, she did a fantastic job, but it wasn't a really difficult case to prosecute.
Well, yeah, but malice murder is always.
In this country, it's tougher than it seems, because it is. It's like in this country, I mean, you know, Zimmerman managed to get away.
Exactly. Right? That was a big
essentially one. The same thing. You know, it's like he was able to claim self-defense because, because, you know, he turned to him.
Specificity.
And tried to,
in the letter of the law.
Yeah, exactly. And it was kind of like, you know, we saw the ship, and obviously this was very different than Ahmaud Arbery, but the Rittenhouse thing was a lot
different.
Was a lot more different, and there was absolutely like a misconception for like a lot of Americans as far as like they painted a picture of Rittenhouse as like this kid who drove like 4 hours to like a neighboring state to just like go to a community he like didn't have any sort of relation to at all to like shoot protesters, which like he did cross over the state line to go do it, but like didn't he work and have all of his family in Kenosha? Like wasn't he like,
dude, wasn't
he
that far.
Like, he was like into, he was like, he like knew the community.
He was intimately
involved with the town.
Yeah,
and like
he's from
they did pitch it. They kind of like did pitch it as though he went and specifically shot protesters when he didn't shoot protesters. Like he shot people that it has come out over time that they were not protesting. They were really just there and kind of just rioting.
The problem with the whole like framing of from the prosecution was in how they did it. First off, I don't know why they pursued a murder charge because they were never going to get it.
Right.
They needed to pursue a weapons charge, which I think the judge was seriously at fault for dismissing because it was one of the few things that he was 100% guilty of, having his hands on a weapon, especially right. That was undeniable. So for the judge to throw that part out was basically like just kind of...
The judge was a dick, but I mean,
it was a little ridiculous
about it. Yeah, the judge was a dick. The judge was a dick for sure. And like, where based on like, even though it was like based on U.S. law, there was a lot less things apparently that Rittenhouse actually broke as far as rules. But it doesn't change that like he went to what he knew was a hot area with a deadly weapon with the intention
strung over his shoulder
with the clear intention to go and shoot somebody.
You know? He went looking for trouble.
He went looking for trouble, which is where what it comes down to. And so it's like, while I'll concede that like there was some wicked fucked up framing by media that tried to turn him into this like, they tried to turn him into like a total non-native of the area who just went there specifically to like shoot black people, which like, he didn't even shoot anybody. But like they did, they tried to turn it into that, which honestly was fucked up because it took away from the fact that he is still a wicked fucked up individual, but they gave it a different narrative that wasn't necessarily true, which then gave enough of a doubt for other people that they were like, what the fuck?
So the point I was like they framed him as like a white supremacist, which he might still be. I don't know.
He probably is.
Right. But the thing is,
or if he wasn't, now he is now.
The way they look, dude, he's a rock star. Like, if he runs for like some office, like 6-7 years down the line, he's winning. By the way, whenever he's old enough
hero.
To do it,
he's a
national hero for the right wing. Like, it's him and Brandon at this point. So, but he might still be. Like, the problem was that the way they put this story out was just like it led people the wrong way, like thinking this was something that was not.
Look, the fact of the matter is that when it came to a specific murder charge and the defense of like of self-defense specifically, you need to go to the letter of the law in that state, which specifically says it doesn't matter why he was in that area. Okay. In certain states, like the context of how you ended up where you are does carry weight, but not in that state. It doesn't. It very specifically states that it doesn't matter how you got there. If in the moment, even if you were the instigator, if you are fearing for your life in that moment, you are allowed to take self-defense. Period. So it doesn't matter that Rittenhouse got his mommy to drive him over to that area. It doesn't matter that he went over to someone else's house and picked up a gun that he didn't own with ammo that wasn't his and then went across a police barricade where he gave the police false pretenses for why he was going in there and then instigated shit with a rifle slung over his shoulder. None of this technically matters. And more of to the point is how fucked up that precedent is in terms of how our legal system works is more of the conversation we need to be having is that he can be a Call of Duty LARPing little shit who goes online and fantasizes about doing this sort of thing. And now, you know what, has to live with the rest of his life and having this situation having warped him and a lot of other people's perspectives of the judicial system, police and these sort of actions. And that is the sort of conversation that we're going to be having in the future, because this is not going to be the last fucking time this
and
comes
not just
up now.
Yeah. Not just conversations, copycats too.
Yes. Right.
Copycat. Like, because you bet your ass with the cert with what the political, with like what the political situation is in this country, that like this is not the last time we're going to see like big protests like this. They may be simmered down now, but like they'll heat right back up, and it we're going to see a copycat. And it's like, Rory is exactly, you're exactly right, that it's like under the terms of like Wisconsin law, like the prosecutors totally fucked up in what they went after him for, and it set a horrible precedent that it's like, yeah, okay, so you could be interpreted that like he did not violate these rules. The rules are fucking absurd. Like, the rules are absurd that you can just go in there with a deadly weapon, instigate it, and then claim self-defense that you're fearing for your life. It's like he went there premeditated to go in there and start something with a deadly weapon, which is like, that's insane.
Ben, you also say that this sets a precedent, but the problem is if the roles were reversed and if this was a black guy,
he would have
doing exactly what he did.
He wouldn't have gone to court, Nas. They would have shot him dead.
Yeah, they would have shot him.
They could have shot him dead. And the other thing is, if he did go to court, like he's guilty as charged. Like, let's be
honest. I want to be even more honest about it, Nas. This is very indicative of who is the judge and who is prosecuting and who is on defense. Because this could have had a very different outcome had those people been different. I'm sorry. There's a big precedent in who the judge was. Okay, he was very, very obviously conservative, right leaning. He, for the love of Christ, the defense called a witness up, and he made the fucking the crowd applaud the man before he took the stand. That shit is
that's so fucked up.
People don't understand is the thing. People don't like they see it as being this innocuous thing. Like I don't understand why wouldn't you respect veterans? You sit there and go, that's not the time or the place.
It's absurd. To do this.
It is absurd.
It's absurd. I didn't honestly laughable. Think about it that way. But in that case, I do like maybe like. Did you guys follow the Arbery case? Because I follow that case a lot more. In that case, I guess the judge in the Arbery case deserves a lot of credit as well. Because
maybe again,
because he shot down the defense whenever, especially the lawyer for Roddy Brand. Like one of his arguments for arguing for he made seven. Like motions for a mistrial, by the way, this dude, like, when one of the motions for a mistrial was because there were black pastors in the gallery. Like, wait, what? Like, he literally said, like, he's concerned that there are black pastors in the gallery that was influencing the jury, and he wanted the judge to declare a mistrial.
I think what you have to look at, though, that's the major difference.
And the judge the judge didn't have, by the way, I just do want to point out, the judge wasn't having any of it. Like, he literally mentioned like they have a constitutional right to be here. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah, I think you can't really compare the two cases because you're talking about it's like the difference in like the Arbery thing is that these weren't cops. They were just dudes. And it's like when we see people get off so much of the time it's because they're police officers and we've created this like system where it's just like, you know, a police officer's accounting of a situation where, you know, someone died. Like there's just this implicit trust in so much of the population to take the word of the police officer. And it's the case in courts too, that it's like, well, they're an officer of the law. Therefore, you know, their opinion holds quite a bit of weight on what a situation was. So it's like with Ahmaud Arbery, I feel like it's more like straightforward because they weren't officers. And it was easy to be like, I mean, it was an obvious lynching is what it was, but you know, I don't know. It's just,
well, and again, I wouldn't necessarily say, I mean, I agree with most of what you said. I think instead of it being about people, it's the justice system at whole that relies on the trust of the police officer. Like, I don't think that there's necessarily universally a lot of trust in the police force so much. It's just that the second you are working within the system, you are suddenly, I think, more likely to believe other appendages of that system.
I think you're underplaying how much of the American public absolutely fucking loves cops.
I mean, potentially rural
and you know
America,
the worst
probably,
part about this case
but,
was
but I don't know
in my
though,
opinion
I mean coming from rural America though, like I know a lot of people who you think that there's like this reliance and this belief in the system, but when it comes to like small town cops, they have just as much distrust in them as every other person. But again, that's sort of intrinsic personal experience,
right?
You know? Yeah, but the worst part about this from watching the prosecution grill the Glenn County police, you know, the first responders on the scene, the level of incompetence and just like, you know, just straight up, you know, they showed up what, like 30 seconds, not even after the shooting happened. Like one of the first officers on the scene, he heard the shots. He was in the area. And there's a man in the street dying, covered in blood, another guy covered in blood. And two guys, you know, one with a shotgun, another guy with another Magnum, whatever, handgun, whatever. And they were, nothing came of that. Like they just went home at the end of the day.
So fucked up, dude.
Like, right? Like nothing. They just told him a story that, and then the other guy admitted to trying to run him over and, you know, trapped him like a rat, his, their words. And it's just, and I'm just like thinking like, fucking hell, man. Like they're literally telling you that we chased him, trapped him, and now he's dead and nothing came of it.
Yep.
And not only that, the first two prosecutors on the case had to recuse themselves, which is why it went on to the Georgia Bureau of Investigations.
You should elaborate on that, by the way. The first prosecutor, Jackie Johnson, I think her name is, the dad, like Gregory McMichael, like Travis's dad, like he worked under her for 20 years, and she actually looked at the case and then she said that there was not enough to prosecute before she recused herself. So and the police actually reached out to her office. It's like, do you think we should make arrests? And she was like, no, there's no grounds for an arrest. And the day Arbery died, these guys actually got to go back home. Like they literally killed somebody and they probably went to the police station to give like a statement, and then they just got in their car and went back home. And then the case went to the county, the neighboring county, and the neighboring county, the prosecutor there, he wrote like a long essay or something. Again, this the incident happened, the killing happened in February, the middle of February. I don't remember the exact date. In April, the neighboring county prosecutor, he said that there was, and by the way, both the prosecutors had access to the video. The video that actually got them prosecuted was the police had access to that video on day one. The prosecutors had access to the video day one. They all looked at the same thing that we all saw. And they said that, no, there's no grounds for, this was self-defense, let him go home. And it was eventually in May when one of the lawyers for the defense actually released the video to the public, thinking that the video would actually exonerate their like clear out any confusions that this was a public, this was self-defense. It was because the lawyers for the defense leaked this video to the public is why then the Cobb County, which is, I think, the prosecution in Atlanta, got involved. The TBI got involved, which is the Georgia Bureau of Investigations, and they started investigating. And they and the Cobb County prosecution, which is like the biggest, like it's like a big office, they started getting in. And that's when, you know, the arrests were made almost 3 months after. This was 3 months after the killing of, like, the murder of Arbery, which is like the most fucked up thing. Like the fact that these people killed, like, a man, like, who was just like running, jogging in his neighborhood, in a neighborhood, and got to go back home to their families
less than 3 miles from his own house.
Like, for 3 months, like, they were just going about their life. They went to work, they got up for had coffee in their house, like, this just like
hung out with their neighbors.
And the fact that they were prosecuted as well, like, and then it went to a jury. And they were prosecuted. So what the fuck are you guys doing? And you know what, Jackie Johnson, after she lost her re-election campaign in late 2020, this is her words. Like, this is how much of a fucking, like, neo-Nazi she is, probably. Her words, the reason she lost was because of the Ahmaud Arbery controversy. Because of that controversy is why she lost the race, her race.
In her words.
It's just, in her words, I was just fucked up. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Why the fuck do we pay these people? What the fuck?
Man, Nas is so angry right now.
No, this was such an open and shut case, man. It's like, it's just.
But it's not. That's what's scary. No, it's not. It's not as much, because people would not have been sweating so much about it if it fucking was.
The thing is, when I was following the proceedings, I think they were done. Like, halfway through, it was like, yeah, you're done. Like, there's no way a jury. Yeah. And the worst bit is, you know what it is? Because, Travis McMichael was found guilty of all 9 counts. The senior McMichael, he was found not guilty of malice murder, but guilty of the other 8 counts. And Roddy Bryan was found not guilty of malice murder, not guilty of 1 count of felony murder, but guilty of the other 3 counts of felony murder and the other 4 charges. The fact that this happened, the way it happened, is just the best case scenario, because if these people go back to appeal and they're like, oh, the jury did not, like, were influenced and blah, 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 that's not going to stand, because the fact that they were found not guilty of malice murder, the other 2, shows that the jury was attentive. Like, they actually paid attention to the evidence in the case, and there's never going to be a chance. Like, they don't have any grounds for any appeal. Like, no one's going to take this on anymore. Like, that's just, they fucked beyond belief. And there's no doubt they're going to get, like, life in prison, all 3 of them. It's just, like, have fun, man. And that's what happens when you're 34 years old and you listen to your dad is like, oh, yeah, let's go hunting this black guy in our neighborhood.
Yeah, dude. That's shit.
So this is not an isolated incident. This is obviously a lot of dinner table conversations that led up to this as well. They're obviously like, we're going to get this guy. In fact, like, you know, this is, in a way, semi-premeditated. They've been, like, hyping themselves out to do this shit.
Did any of you watch the testimony of the neighbor, one of the neighbors, this woman?
I didn't watch
the
lady.
Like, the ultimate Karen. The ultimate Karen that you
can. Are you talking about the young lady? Are you talking about the was it the Lopez?
Yeah, exactly. Diego Lopez's wife. So, she has a Facebook page, and she's the admin of the Facebook group. It just has, like, people in that neighborhood in that Facebook group. And she was the one, like, she would, like, anytime something happens in the neighborhood, like, she would just, like, post, hey guys, I just witnessed a black guy with multiple tattoos all over his neck and body coming into our neighborhood. Keep an eye out. You need to make sure. But, dude, just go and watch the video. It's just the most mind-boggling thing. And these are the kind of people that puts everybody on edge. Every fucking body. Because she was posting all over social media. She has posts on February 10th, February 11th, and stuff like that. So, she's been posting about this one black guy in her neighborhood since December, like, months before Arbery got killed. What happens when you do this? What happens when you post like this on social media? Everybody's, like, on the lookout. Everybody's on edge. Everybody's like, oh, someone's coming after my kids. Someone's coming after my house. I'm next, blah, blah, blah. And that's when situations like this happen. Like, she's, in my mind, again, like, she's not broken the law, but in my mind, she's just as guilty. Like, honestly. Right.
That whole community sounds like it's a little fucked.
It's yeah, fucking crazy. Karen.
Yeah, yeah, but she's so, like, she's one of so many, dude. It's like, I feel like we see, I feel like we see so many of...
But that's their life, Ben. Like, that's her life. Like, she... Oh, this is what she does. She has video cameras all over her house, and she spends all her fucking days like looking at cameras, reviewing cameras, watching shit go down.
Bro,
and,
they're
and
everywhere.
Yeah,
they're
dude, in, they are.
They're in New York, dude. My buddy in Astoria used to have this old Greek lady who lived next to him, and she was just like, she was that bitch, dude. She just sat at her windowsill and just gave the stink eye to anybody that she thought was right. bad news, and she had cameras all over that, and like she was that dude. There, yeah. are, there are tons
being,
of them.
I bet you being people. Admin of that Facebook group is like the highlight of her day. Like, her being able to post about that black guy in her neighborhood is like her being, like, you know, the center of attention.
No, so why do you think it happens, man? It's because there's millions and millions. That's social media's bread and fucking butter, is what you just described, man. It's angry, pissed off people who go out and freely express their angry, pissed off opinions on social media, which is the best thing social media ever wanted, because there's always going to be somebody who is angry and pissed off in the exact opposite direction. And now they met one another, and now they're going to fight because Karen A feels this way about the neighborhood and Karen B feels this way about her neighborhood. They don't even be in the same fucking neighborhood, but they don't feel the same way, and now they're going to argue with one another about why they're wrong, and that's going to eat up a shit ton of ad revenue for Facebook, and they're going to love every fucking second of it. So they're going to push more Karen A's and Karen B's together into little chat groups so they can bitch and moan about their fucking small town white people first world fucking problems against one another, because that's generating a fuck ton of money. Because it's not just about one Karen, it's not about Karen A and Karen B, it's about a million Karen A's and a million Karen B's, and the kind of revenue you can generate when you piss them off and make them fight one another. And the sad, like, and again, this isn't a social media problem. This has always been going on since the fucking 50s and 40s. You've always
social had
nosy busybodies, but social media amplified it for a profit margin. Like, it is so much more loud and vocal these days because somebody in a marketing team somewhere sat back and went, we can make money off of this. You guys know that, right? And everyone went, really? Tell us more, Tom. And they all sat down and figured out this very specific methodology about putting up this certain article that's written by one of their friends from a third-party source that pisses off both demographics in just the right way. So they both find their way to the comment section, find the awareness of the other person's existence, and then fight to the death. Like, that's a huge part of what makes social media a shit ton of money.
It's that, and it's also people's...
A day in the life of Rory.
It gives people, like Rory was saying, their bubbles, their own respective bubbles. But then on top of that, people are so much more willing to talk shit online in a way that they would not have been quite as willing to in person. So you, like, have these, you know, it's like these people that are willing to post all this crazy shit in, like, local town and local community forums that, you know, they would probably only have 25% of the guts to say, you know, that amount of it, you know, or sorry, 25, that's what I meant to say. They would only have the guts to say about 25% of the amount of the shit they say online in person. So it does. And it gets these other people, like, they fucking pump each other up into these crazy fucking racist rages and just, you know, like, just fear of people that, you know, they've just totally made up in their
head. Also find allies in how you think as well. So,
right. Exactly. And I mean, it's like, shit, dude, it's even true of us. It's like, you know, this fucking podcast is a bubble of, you know, three dudes who knew Nabil, that Nabil was like, hey, all of us are just a bunch of pissed off fucking, you know, progressives. Let's put us all in a fucking group chat. Like,
yeah, but the difference is that we're right, Ben.
We're also not, like, paranoid. Well,
Nabil,
of, like...
Rory, and I are right. Nas is the token fucking guy they bring on to.
has it ever awkward to you? Like, has it ever awkward to you that we might be wrong? Like, you might be wrong? Like,
I mean, about what, Nas? Give me an example.
About, like, say, again, I don't think I'm ever going to be wrong about healthcare, but say,
what,
about,
you're saying Kyle Rittenhouse was a hero?
No, not that. But what if we're wrong about, say, the trickle down economy or something? Like, maybe this is the answer.
Nas, that's a really hard example to take because we are definitely not fucking wrong about trickle down economics. Pick a different example.
I think one of the things that leftists, including myself, love to, you know, take our stance on, that's entirely from, like, a moral standpoint, is that of criticizing, like, U.S. empire and, like, how fucked up U.S. empire is. But it's, you know, one, there's no side of the argument of pretending that it's good. That's obviously ridiculous.
But if you're
a straight up imperialist, like, if you're an imperialist and your view of the world is that, you know, there are a group of powers that sustain themselves through the exploitation and, you know, militaristic actions against weaker opponents throughout the world with various resources for them to take, like, it's horribly fucked up and unethical. But I'm sure there are people that make the argument that goes, okay, well, that, guess what? That's all of civilizational human history. You know, like, it's just like, and it's obviously fucked. It is. It's obviously fucked, and it's disgusting, and all three of us hate it. But like, I guess like someone who would call, you know, like, try to be edgy and call themselves like a realist would certainly argue that they're like, is it, you know, that it's easy for Americans to, you know, sit on a high horse and complain about their imperialism, but still enjoy all of the fruits of said imperialism. You know, that it's like we all benefit because our entire economies are built on our, you know, imperialistic exploitation of the global South and various other countries. So, like, I guess that's where
someone. I always kind of hated that argument, though. It's like, oh, I mean, that doesn't invalidate the argument itself. It invalidates the person. You know what I mean?
Of course.
It's very much the same thing. Like, and I'll take it back to the shittiest example that I can use to be just a total asshole when anyone ever brings it up is you bring it back to Buddhism. You got Siddhartha Gautama, right? Who it becomes later known as the Buddha, who was born into a very, very wealthy, rich family, which is why he ended up taking the path he did, because he saw these people suffering when he left his palace. Until eventually he sort of walks away from that. Imagine taking the same argument and being, well, fucking Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha, he was a fuck what he's fucking saying about love and getting rid of possessions. He came from a rich fucking family. Fuck that guy, right? Who gives a shit what Buddha's saying about love and peace and tranquility? He came from a rich family. Fuck that guy.
Right. No, and I'm certainly, I think you're right, Roy. I guess
long way to go.
Because we were talking about, like, you know, is there anything we're wrong about? I'm sure that there are plenty of people that think, like, our takes on U.S. imperialism are
just
naive.
Our takes on, like, let's bring it, like, to, like, domestic stuff, like policies. Like, they will say, one of the things that always keeps bringing up is, like, criminal justice. Is, like, they like, the right are so adamant that they're the ones who are right about, like, criminal justice. And the left are also very adamant that we're the ones who are right about criminal justice. It's like, has it ever occurred to you, like, maybe we might be wrong? Like, maybe, like, the way this is, like, this is why things are, like, you know, like, maybe we're wrong. Like, has that ever occurred to you?
I don't think when it comes to criminal justice, I mean, like, I think that there are certain ambiguities that I may not be informed on enough to make, like, really strong opinions about niche topics. But I don't think it's, like, I don't think I could hear a convincing enough argument to convince me that I'm wrong when I think about, like, the U.S. as, you know, a huge, like, privatized prison system that purposely puts lots of poor people, especially people of color, in jail, and, like, compared to other systems in countries of comparable infrastructure, you know, that have much more, you know, modern prison systems that are actually about rehabilitation instead of, like, brutalist punishment. I don't think I could hear a convincing enough
separating drug offenses from actual criminal offenses.
Right. Not even just drug offenses, even violent offenses. I mean, it's like, there's a lot of countries where, like
having more violent crime, China, for example, like,
right. Yeah. So it's like, I don't think I could hear, you know, I think probably where I have the hardest time as an American imagining certain, and I know every country has its exceptions. Like, I know almost every country in the world has its line, even the most progressive ones, where, you know, like, Norway, for example, where I think it was Norway, where there was that crazy mass shooting, like,
yeah,
10 years ago.
The dude,
it was like a summer camp, right? Or some shit like that. Yeah. That guy technically could only have a 20 or 25 25 year maximum sentence, but it would just be a 25 year mark where, like, he would have to be reviewed, whether, you know, essentially like a parole hearing. But they're pretty sure, like, a guy like that will never actually get let out of jail, even if it's like a rehabilitation process. But the vast majority of these countries, even for violent crime, there is a limit on how much time you can spend in prison for it. Like, you don't see these, like, ridiculous sentences that you see in the US where it's like, you know, three life sentences or, you know, life. You don't see someone being in jail for their entire life, even for pretty bad violent crimes. They do believe in,
you don't see three strike penalties,
right? You don't see three strike penalties, and, like, you don't even see someone who, like, you know, killed a man when they were, you know, 18 years old. They're not going to get out of jail when they're, like, 80. They're going to get out of their jail probably in like their 40s.
You know what? I'm not wrong about healthcare. We need universal healthcare.
You're not wrong about it. So, yeah.
That's a great example, though, Nas, because when you look at that, it's the sort of thing that's the argument of you know, when you're sitting there being like, well, are we wrong? I think that, you know, when you're kind of playing the devil's advocate there, you were talking about, like, the realists' ideology, right? It's the argument of, like, well, what is realistic? But that's not really what we're here discussing. You know what I mean? Like, the pragmatic, realistic approach is often, it's often one of acquiescence, isn't it? You know what I mean? We're not here trying to look for the option that is the realistic sort of, like, middle half road. We're sort of trying to discuss the sort of more beneficial outcome, the thing that should be, not necessarily the thing that is realistic. because realistic is sort of based on the definition of sort of what we've had in the past, and what we've had in the past has obviously been inadequate. So trying to argue from a realistic standpoint based on the things we've had is going to be the sort of road that is depressing and sort of seems ludicrous from where we're coming from, because we're the sort of people sitting there being like, well, we should have healthcare for all. Well, it's not realistic, because any sort of chance of passing something like that is going to get shot down because people are going to scream communism and socialism. Doesn't matter that, you know, socialism is somewhat accurate, communism obviously not so much. And then they will discuss, you know, how to pay it, despite the fact that, you know, people won't talk about insurance costs, say, for an example, or, you know,
well, it always comes down to messaging as well, Rory. Like, this, yeah, this is the other thing. Like, I would beg to differ on, like, okay, everything we, I feel like we talk about, we come back around to, like, okay, we're not wrong, but we have a valid point. And the problem with us is that, or at least the left, is that a lot of these policies, people, both right and left, we were talking about this earlier, people agree with most of these changes that American people desperately need.
We should only pay for them.
Yeah, well, when you break it down into, say, the bill, the $3.5 trillion bill, that was a total figure that's broken down into 10 years. So that's $350 billion per year.
Yeah, but nobody explains that up at the front. They give you a number, people see a headline, and then it's done.
But the military budget is like $800 billion. So, like, yeah, we go back to empire again, because it all starts with empire. If we can fucking curb down on empire, which is why when we're talking about China and Taiwan earlier,
I think I will be sad
if we lose Taiwan, because fuck that shit. I don't want another war. Fucking
no. Nabil, I think
on the shore of China.
I think what you're underestimating a bit is, I think what you're underestimating a bit is that there is a vast majority of Americans, and I know Rory can speak to this because of the demographic area that he hangs out in, that there, you know, people that are older, people like 55 and older, very much have an attitude that it is always going to work out. And I'm not talking so much about like Trumpers, but like Trumpers definitely have this too. But like, I'm talking about the classic, like, people who were riding with Biden, you know, or like independent, or even like independent, like basic ass white dads, and lib moms. It's very much like an attitude that, like, you know, it's all still going to work out, that it's just going to, you know, that it's all kind of just a game, and that, like, you know, these political things will cycle through and we'll eventually have another boom like we did in the 90s, and everything will just be great. And I think that's what it comes down to, is that sometimes, like, when I talk to like my in-laws about this, because they're those kind of people, and they're great people. Like, they're wonderful people, but just like politically, they're just like so not informed, and to the level that they are informed, they get most of it from like NBC Nightly News. You know, they're not as engrossed in like being as aware of just like the little pieces of scotch tape that are holding up the American system and like how fucking bad it is. It's like when you talk to them about that, they're just like, yeah, but like, that's just how it's been. Like, and it's going to be fine. It's just like, they don't see it in the same way that so many people our age do. They just fundamentally do not. And then on the other side of that, you have like people at that age who are like Trumpers and are just on a whole other fucking level.
Well, you're looking at a demographic of people who, on the one hand, are either impoverished and angry about it and are looking for someone to blame, or they're living in a system where they've never had to deal with that type of adversity that other part of the supporting demographic has to deal with on a daily basis, and they're doing it because it's funny or it's vitriolic, or they're looking at a group of people who are upset by it, and they are it sounds like it's ludicrous, but it's just as simple as that. They're looking at people inconvenienced by an ideology that they have never had to deal with. It has never affected their life. These are 9 to 5, $70,000 to $80,000 a year suburbanite nobodies who will go to their job. That's just some average thing. They leave politics at it for the most part, except for the snide comments they might make with their coworkers, who most likely feel the exact same way they do because they were raised in the same average middle class suburbanite situation that these people were raised in. And they just go and forth. They don't really care a crap about anything else as long as their way of life isn't hindered. And when you're talking about progressive policies, it's a sort of thing that does quote unquote hinder their life, because it's the sort of thing that conservatives tell them is going to increase their taxes, and that's all they give a shit about.
What you're not mentioning,
it's an oversimplification,
is that the big difference is a lot of it is made up of people who are in like that 70,000-80,000 range, but they're people who had levels of upward mobility when they were younger, fairly easy time doing things like buying first homes, the sort of just like little things like that,
getting
their ability to build wealth, like not start off life with like massive amounts of debt, so that, you know, these salaries, they look at it and they're like, well, there's a lot of millennials who make this money, but there's millennials vastly start their life with multiple, you know, like tens of thousands of debt.
Where one might be sitting there dealing with that, another may not be.
And you have these people who bought houses for like these like very reasonable prices that are now valued at such crazy prices that they've managed to build up insane amounts of wealth. And like you look at them and like, of course they're like, what the fuck is your problem? What the fuck are you so upset about? Like shit is fine. They're like, yeah, shit's kind of bad. And like Trump, you know, that's why they were so pumped about Biden was because it's, and I know I bring it back to my in-laws a lot, but I just think they're perfect examples. Like my wife and I were going on about a bunch of this shit one night at dinner. And I was complaining about how Biden has just not addressed any of it. And my mother-in-law said, yeah, but you know what? Like, at least like we don't hear about whatever crazy shit he's doing. Like we're not hearing about all the drama in the news. And a huge amount of the American public, Nabil, like that is all they cared about. That was all they cared about is they just were just like, I don't want to hear about it. I just want to be able to enjoy my pleasantries and not think I don't want to have to feel bad all the time.
Yeah.
They don't give a shit that Biden hasn't changed very many of Trump's fucking immigration policies. You know, they don't care that Biden's not canceling loans.
It's about
like, well, those things don't affect them in the first place. And unfortunately, they're the bigger demographic that vote in the Democratic.
Yeah. And they're the demographic that votes. Exactly. So it's, you know, it's, you'd think like, and it's like you said, Americans overwhelmingly support a lot of these fucking policies that were put out by Bernie and various other progressives of things like, you know, universal, you know, considering better healthcare options, at least, you know, student loan cancellation, like they all love the theory of it. They all love that. Yeah. They love the theory of it, but they just like, they have no reason to question so many of the reasons that are thrown at them for why, you know, they don't happen like it. And I'm sorry, Rory, I know I keep fucking jumping in.
No, you're fine.
But like it, a perfect example of it is honestly, my mom is very, very progressive. Like she voted for Bernie. Even with everything she's seen, like when I go home and I'll talk to her about politics, she still has that inherent belief that it's just the Republicans. Like it's just the Republicans that are really fucking this up. And like, she knows that the Democratic Party is a mess, but like, I really have to kind of like, I have to walk her through a lot of situations to be like, Mom, like, yeah, the Republicans are fucking horrible, but like, you have no idea how much your own party is just self-sabotaging everything. Like just self-sabotaging everything.
You have to look at it at a certain point and go, well, we got 8 years of Obama. We had the Clinton era. Okay. The Bush era was tough. We had large deficit spending under Trump. We're back in Biden era, which is, you know, Democrat control. But why aren't things better? Right? Where's the progress? Where is the things happening? We're still living in a system where it's the same thing it was 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 20 years ago. You're still hearing stories of millennials who are sitting there going, I went to a bank looking for a loan where I was trying to get a mortgage on a house that I wanted to buy that would have set me up where I would have had to pay $800 a month for this loan and they wouldn't give it to me because it was too much money. So I guess I'll have to go back to spending $1,500 a month on rent. And we're living in a system where that makes sense, where you're too much of a financial risk to this bank to give a loan out so that you pay $800 a month towards getting yourself a home. But that's too much risk, knowing full well that you at that current point are paying far more for rent and you cannot get a bank to secure that for you. This is the system that our generation grew up understanding. And it's sad because the boomers didn't give a shit and Generation X got left behind, but also kind of, you know, were in a position where like things sucked, but wasn't so bad that they couldn't get ahead. And then the millennials came along. We're just getting steamrolled. The Gen Z after us, they're fucked. And the sad thing is they know it and they don't give a shit. They really don't. They're out there fucking memeing and not giving a fuck. Some of them are voting for Trump for the fucking fun of it. And this is the situation we're going to get into because eventually we're going to get to the point where like our generation is exacerbated with politics. We really are. You know, we were very hopeful 10 years ago when Obama was getting elected and the Yes We Can crew was coming through and everyone's going, yeah, look at us. We're going to be the generation that makes a difference and goes in. And we just got the shit kicked out of us. We got beat the fuck down. And you know what the funny thing is about it? The generation before us, they noticed. And some of them are pretty gung-ho about being progressive and changing the world, but a lot of them don't give a shit. And it's hard pressed for me to ask myself, why don't they give a shit? Because I've been here the whole time, right? We've been here watching as this whole shit unfolds.
Gen Xers are like big. I feel like Gen Xers, you meet a lot of them, like you said, that are very, they're progressive and they tend to like agree with a lot of the same goals as like millennials, but they're disaffected. And then they also, on top of that, when they're not disaffected, they tend to kind of fall into it in like the more like Elizabeth Warren side of like progressiveness and how they feel that needs to get done. So there's still like a pretty big ideological split. Like you said, it's where, you know, they're definitely more progressive than boomers overall, but they're very much like, like I have buddies that are like this, where you like talk to them about it and they still like to find a lot of reasons to blame the left for why things don't happen for the Democratic Party. And it's like, oh my God,
because the left has so much fucking power.
Yeah. The left has so much power
and influence that we can just like, you know, come in there and just fucking backroom deal the shit out of the fucking corporate Democrats. That's why.
Right. Right. And it, yeah.
Well, and you got to kind of feel bad for Gen X. You got to feel a little bit bad for Gen X, right? Because Gen X was in this really weird time. Like their generation was in a really weird time in history. Like, think about it, where the boomer generation.
Gen X was Kamala Harris, man. What are you talking about?
Think about it. Not just Kamala Harris. Okay, but look at the baby boomers. The baby boomers were a generation that did not give up control, right? They were a generation that took they stayed in power the longest, right? We're talking about they're the generation that increased retirement age, and not just for the benefit of the people who got screwed over by that increase, but for the people who like generally made a shit ton of money getting a little bit like a couple more years before forced retirement at large corporations. Right. You're talking about a generation that consolidated wealth for themselves better than anyone before and are still in that, they're still in control. Now, Gen X was supposed to come in and grab a little bit of that power, right? They were supposed to get some of that wealth. You're looking at Gen X and millennials as a result as being the majority of the wealth that our generations will get will be gotten through inheritance. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of thing that you haven't seen historically, really. Okay. The greatest generation, quote unquote, didn't really hand a they handed a lot to the baby boomers, but the baby boomers consolidated that wealth. The people who got handed a lot of wealth by the greatest generation, quote unquote, in the baby boomer generation were the people who consolidated the real wealth. The mm-hmm. smart ones, anyways. The idiots lost their money like every generation. But the smart ones took that fucking took that gain and ran with it in a way that no generation before them did.
I think that with Gen X, I think a lot of millennials, especially, but all, you know, Gen Z, mm-hmm. big time. But millennials, we definitely like to kind of judge Gen Xers. I think is that like it's like you know they didn't you know they figure didn't out the, they didn't figure out the lie. They didn't figure out the bull. You know that it was all bullshit.
I don't necessarily feel that way.
But it's like you know I think that it's an unfair judgment because I think that if the same because you have to remember with generation. Gen X, you have to remember with Gen X that you have to remember with Gen X that Gen X still benefited pretty heavily. Where like they came of adult age at a time where it was like. The Cold War was ending. You know what I mean? It was like the Cold War ended and you just had like this like decade long period of like, you know, the period between
the 90s weren't so bad, right? The 90s weren't so
well, that's what, no, it's true. It was a huge, huge economic boom. Like everything was going really great. Sure. So it's like, it's not surprising. It's like, if that shit had continued for like another 20 years, we'd be no fucking different than Gen X. We'd have the exact, we'd have the exact same attitude of going along with all of it because guess what? Part of the reason millennials are so pissed off is because we did listen to everything that our parents told us to do.
Sure.
And then as we walked into the working world, everything was so fucked up right away. Yeah. And there was just none of the same things that were it just, you know,
Millennial generation, we graduated into a destroyed economy. We graduated into the economy as it was at the peak and into the destruction of the economy. So some people kind of got out. But Gen X, you're right, very much kind of exited into the working world in a position where they could take advantage of the sort of things that the previous generation had, unlike the sort of millennial and the Gen Z will have afterwards.
There was still enough of a good reason for them to follow out the path that they had been told to follow.
Also, how much was the house when a Gen Xer was 30 years old versus when a millennial was 30 years old?
It was definitely, it was definitely
more than when they were kids.
Yeah, it was definitely so way more expensive.
So the barriers to entry, to all that sort of lifestyle and the access to wealth accumulation was a lot easier.
I would say that the younger end of Gen X had a hard time because a lot of them were probably purchasing houses for familial reasons. And then heading up to the housing crisis of 2008, were probably looking at their assets getting absolutely destroyed. So I'm not going to lie and say that, you know, Gen X didn't probably have some hurdles that it had to face. I'm sure there's plenty of them that got totally burned by that situation in the derivatives market. They were the people who got their asses kicked by that. That wasn't the millennials that got their asses kicked. We got our asses kicked when we tried to enter the market that was destroyed in terms of jobs. That was the generation where millennials were the assholes who went to high school and talked to their counselor and said, what kind of job should I go into? And they all looked at them and said, engineer. Everyone go be a fucking engineer. If you don't want to flip burgers, go be an engineer. And then they all graduated in like 2007 to 2010 and everybody was an engineer and they all found that they were all applying for jobs with 400 other fucking people that applied for it, and they all got thinned the fuck out. So
you know, you're right that it's like the ones that are probably a lot more close to the millennial ideology are the ones that were born in that kind of what do you call it? The ones that were born, you know, in the early 80s that were at the tail end of Gen X.
Yeah.
But the ones that were born in the 60s, they have like pretty much the exact same mentality as boomers because like, why wouldn't they? Like,
they got no fucking excuse, Ben. They got no fucking excuse.
And it's like, and hey, it's also true that there's also a lot of older millennials that tend to be a lot more like Gen X, like as far as like their ideologies.
Guys are a bunch of assholes. I would have known to buy that stock around Apple too. Okay. All right. I would have known.
Rory, you actually missed out earlier in the pod. We were talking about like real estate prices and like Nas was talking about like the amount of, you know, like equity that, you know, how much of a profit he would make on selling his house.
Did he sell his AMC?
No, he was talking about how it was going to be like $300K. And I looked at a bill and I was like,
I could buy a lot of AMC.
Nas is like, don't tempt
me. Nas is gonna break my heart because the market. I don't know if
any. How much did you say he was down? 70K or some shit.
Yeah. He's breaking my heart. I wish he just sold. I was looking at the market, going, okay, look, Nas, the cap was like somewhere on $40 a share at AMC. It's not gonna get higher than that again. I'm sorry, it's not. Sell. And it hit like high 30s, and I tried to get him to sell.
Where is it at now?
Not there. It's low nowhere 30s. Either. If it's still in the 30s, I'll be pleasantly surprised. Yeah, $30.86.
Lose it all? Is he really going to let himself lose it all?
Don't. If he's going to listen to all this, so please,
not. No, he's actually not, Rory, because we forgot to mention you that we actually decided like an hour into recording that we're like, this has just been like a joke of a recording. We're just hanging out. This is
I don't give a shit, dude. That's cool. I gotta tell you, Nas should, for the love of Christ, I've been trying to get him to sell that for fucking ever now, dude. I mean, the crypto market's been fucking bleeding lately.
Don't worry, he's diversified, Rory. He's also holding Shiba Inu.
I don't even want to know how much money Nas has made on Shiba Inu.
He probably hasn't made as much as he thinks now because the market has corrected fairly significantly. If he didn't buy into the previous decimal point over.
Right. Then, and they're also like, there also is, I remember, you know, I think Rory, you were the one that explained it to me that like, even if you are one of those nut jobs who bought like 5K of like Shiba Inu, like a year ago or whatever, that suddenly you're worth like $20 billion. But you couldn't even cash out on that. Like, even if you have, it's like, you can't like go and like go to a Coinbase thing and just be like, hey, like give me.
Yeah, hey, guess what? No, you'll destabilize the whole fucking economy.
Yeah. So you don't even get to do anything with it. So it's like,
I mean, some people do if they're smart and they trickle it out nice and slow. I'm sorry, Nas, you're not that guy. You're not going to be that guy that does that.
How do you trickle out $2 billion worth of Shiba?
Tranche sell. You basically look at the market, you look at how much you've got. I mean, we're looking at Shiba Inu's like half a quadrillion coins, right? So let's say that you were one of the lucky bastards and you're sitting there, you bought 15 billion Shiba Inu and you're sitting on just millions of dollars right now. I would go ahead and set up sale points over the course of the next like year and a half, where every month, every day, I'm selling off a very specific point. And I've obviously talked to a tax lawyer about this. I've talked to people in terms of mitigating my costs, but also understanding that I need to put as much as I can into the market. That's also not going to destabilize the market so that I can get the best return I possibly can. Also understanding that there's other factors at play, like other people doing the same thing. And then I probably look for strong moments to really pump some cash out into the market at high points, knowing that I'll probably destabilize it a little bit, but someone is going to, so it might as well be me. And I literally just bleed through into the market over the course of the next fucking year and a half, man. Like, there's no immediate out unless you're Elon Musk and you can go into Twitter and go, I'm going to type something stupid like a douchebag, and everyone gets excited and buys your stock while you push 10 billion out, you know?
The only people who get away with that are Zuckerberg. I still don't understand though why someone who has like, let's say, you know, $500 million worth of Shiba, because of just that crazy rise, like what legal hard stop is there that says like that they can't immediately pull that out and put it somewhere?
Because it's such a massive amount, putting it into the market will just crack. Like, it's, again, it's the supply. I mean, the simplest way to think about it is supply and demand, right?
But they can't just press sell and sell.
Oh, they can, right? I mean, they absolutely can.
So they can't actually just get that money though and move it if they want.
No, because they'll like. So let me put it this way.
I'm so confused. I don't understand why. How can they sell but they can't sell?
Let's put it this way. Let's ignore the value of Shiba Inu right now. And Nabil, tell me if I'm being wrong about this, but let's pretend the value of Shiba is 5 cents. Right? Let's say it's 5 cents. Just to be simple about it, I've got a billion coins, 1 billion, and they're 5 cents each. Right? Now I go ahead and say I want to sell my billion coins right now at 5 cents each. I put them into the market. Right? Immediately, I'm going to purchase every contract that's a buy because my sell is going to exchange for every single buy contract on the market because I just filled all of them pretty much with my $1 billion, right? Or I'm sorry, my billion dollars, my billion coins. So let's say there's 500,000 people at that time and they're all trying to buy at the price that I just bought. Well, I just fulfilled all those fucking contracts, right? So now they don't exist anymore. So this is going to affect the market in a very adverse way because now they're all gone. Now all that exists are lower prices. So I fulfill all those contracts and now there's a panic in the market, right? Now they're all assuming that the price of Shiba is going to be less than that because that's where the next price set is going to be. It's not going to go up from there. It's going to go down. Why would my immediate purchase, or I'm sorry, why would my immediate sale increase the value? It won't, right? It'll go down because I flooded the market with the coin, right? Mm-hmm. So I've immediately at 5 cents, taken all of those contract orders out. So now I can no longer sell the rest of my contracts because they're for 5 cents and there's no more for 5 cents. The people above me, they're not going to get touched. And the people below me, they're not going to get their contracts sold because it's not enough, right? So I can sell as much into the market as there is for the demand at that price. But after that, I'm shit out of luck. So now the rest of my contract is going to just fucking sit there. But since I've bought so much out of the fucking market, the price is going to go down. So mine's going to sit there. Other contracts are going to get fulfilled, and it's going to create a cascade. Because again, it's not just me in the market. It's all of these other things. There's option trades. There's margin calls. Basically. It's a trigger. Exactly.
When you do something that big, it's a trigger.
What happens at this point is now I have set in effect a cascade of operations that will occur as a result of this. And that was people who were expecting the value to go up. I flooded the market, causing it to go down. And now there's going to be a cascade sell-off of all these other people who are simply waiting for a trigger in the market to happen. You know what I'm saying by that? Mm-hmm. So then that trigger occurs because of my action, which then, so here's that at say, $4.90, and they were waiting for the trigger to happen, and then it hits, right? And so that trigger occurs, and then all of these sells occurs, which pushes more Shiba into the market, which lowers it again, which then triggers all of these, right? Same thing happens, lowers the price again, and so you get what's known as a cascade sell-off, right? So I wanted to sell my billion, right? But instead, what I just did was caused every poor bastard margin trader from here below me to end up getting all of their sales triggered.
So all right, let's say you have $1 billion worth of Shiba. Mm-hmm. Could you safely sell it off in things like $5 million increments and be able to cash out on that and have it be safe to like move that money into a more secure market where you can, you know, like move it into an S&P?
You are definitely safer selling as the price increases. You know what I mean? Right. During a bull market, you're going to find that you're going to be able to sell a lot more, because especially you'll find people who are trying to sell for higher, but then you're sitting there offering them a lower amount.
But what I'm asking is that an amount that you could realistically safely sell off in increments, like one, you know, like one month at a time? Could you sell off like 5 million? If you have $1 billion worth
in Shiba,
I mean,
five million off a month with the motion if you did it right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I absolutely think you could. Yeah. Because it depends on the motion of the market. Depends on how much interest is in the market. Depends on how many people are involving themselves. You know what I mean, man? Like think about if you were to say the same thing with Tesla. Like, do you think you could move that money through Tesla? Absolutely, you could.
Right.
When it comes to Shiba, it's a meme coin. There is a shit ton of motion going through it. The point being is that if you flood the market all at once with such a massive amount, that's when you're going to see problems. But that's like it's called tranched selling or tranched buying, where it's like you pick a specific point and then you sell in very specific amounts over the course of a certain amount of time, because it mitigates your risk rather than pushing so much into the market at one particular time, knowing that that particular amount will affect the market, especially when you happen to be a big player. You push out very, very slowly over the course of, say, 6 months to a year. You might lose at certain occurrences during this, but you also gain at certain occurrences during this, so it kind of evens out. The big issue I would have, especially when I'm looking at the crypto sphere, is it's not necessarily the same as the stock market, which is where you're, depending on what region you're in, going to incur a lot more tax burden, I guess would be the easiest way to say it. You're going to incur a lot more tax burden selling in very specific amounts. But it all depends on what you bought at versus what you sold at, and then you're going to pay a specific percentage based on those two, on the difference between the two. But yeah, no, I mean, honestly, dude, if you had a billion, like, you probably could. I mean, Shiba's a tough example, and a billion's a tough example, because a billion in Shiba, which is 500 trillion coins, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of a hard example, but, like, in simple terms, if we were talking about a normal stock or coin, yeah, putting a billion of something into the market would 100% fuck with it, unless you're Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg, and you specifically, like, time it at a point of specific interest in that particular market, because the buying that occurs in that market will offset your sale. And like an example for, say, after when Jeff Bezos divorced his wife and decided that he wanted to push $10 billion of his stock from Amazon into a space project, he did it at a very specific time and used news about Amazon stock so that when he actually did it, Amazon's price went up on the same day that he sold $10 billion worth of shares. So there are ways to time the market where you can push that money out specifically, but you need to be careful, because on the one hand, you're risking the value you have in shares over the value that they could be valued at after the bull run. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sitting there trying to sell at 5 cents, and after the bull run it's worth 7 cents. I'm going to get everything that I want out of the market, but technically I'm going to lose out on what the shares would be worth, because if I just held them, they'd be worth a greater value in the other end, right? There's no guarantee on the other end that at that 7 cents, I'll be able to pull all my value out and get it at a 7 cents a share valuation, which makes it more advantageous for me to pull out at a 5 cents value. Valuation, knowing that had I just held, technically my shares would be worth more on the other end. The guess is whether the market will crash on the other end, or will it continue to go up, or would I be able to pull out at that value, and yada 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 yada.
Okay. I appreciate you slowly but surely explaining.
Convoluted.
Yeah.
And sort of like, and again, the reason why it's confusing is because there's
it's not just you. It's not just you trying to pull $1 billion out of the market, or I'm sorry, 1 billion shares worth of value out of the market. It's the other 1 million people also trying to affect the market at the exact same time, some of which may be trying to do the same thing that you are, some of whom may be trying to do the same thing in the opposite direction. You're trying to sell 1 billion coins. You might get lucky. Somebody out there might be trying to buy 1 billion coins right at the same fucking time. The two of you just cross paths in the wind and shake fucking hands and off it goes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's definitely a possibility. That happening at the same time, Nas tries to buy 1 billion coins and I try to sell 1 billion coins at the same time, the market's just going to go and pass, and it's going to just sit there because that's just a transaction, you know? And with that, I got to pee. I'll be right back.
I'm actually going to take off, guys.
Oh, okay. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah. I got to go pick up my wife at the airport at midnight. She's getting back from
fancy.
Yeah, I'm going to go enjoy my first day off in weeks. So
nice.
All right, it's been
a pleasure.
So bad.
Nas, looking forward to hearing of you putting your 300K and selling your house profit into AMC.
Nas, yeah, sell AMC.
Okay, we advise Nas to put all his equity into AMC.
I'm leaving right now. I can't.
All right. Yeah. Bye, guys.
I'll talk to you guys later. Yo, Rory, I lost 70K.
I know. Sell it. Sell it.
Why would I sell now?
Because you can lose more.
Because you can.
Because you don't want to say... And you don't want to say I lost 100K. How bad would that sound?
How much
you don't want to lose? See, really, Nas, you want to lose six figures?
You
really?
And me are going to sit down one of these days and talk about this seriously, where you're actually going to consider selling that shit when I make a good point, aren't you?
Are you still up? Are you
I'm like a little down now.
All right, I'm leaving.
There was a point when I was hella down. We're talking about this
at some point. Oh, yeah.
Fucking.
I think you just triggered Rory. Nas, what do you do this, man?
Yeah.
He's in such a good mood, too. He's... Anyhow, that was a fun one. It was just a good catch up with everybody. It's been a while. I needed it. Anyone else? I'm gonna go enjoy this beautiful day.
Oh fuck you!
Peace out.
It's what's the weather? It's like 35 degrees. I bet it's 35 degrees there too. It's like just different 35.